Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This right here, this show, the program you've tuned into, this is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, the talented and lovely Mr. Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
No one's ever called me talented and lovely before.
Oh, well, I've always felt it in my heart. The holidays are here. I was feeling very open and loving, so I wanted to just shine a little light on you. Hey, I got to tell you something.
Yeah,
I forgot to mention it in yesterday's show, but here's something, you know, people, and I'm going to mention this because I got to tell you, I was a little touched, and we'll get with our guest in just a few moments here, but on Midnight in the Desert on Friday night, Tim,
yep,
we had a medium join us.
Ooh.
And do readings.
Okay.
Well, that's nothing new. I mean, we've done that on this program before, right?
Sure.
But as you know, I've always avoided getting a reading.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. I've always avoided having that done because I've just been like, I don't know. I feel like, you know, people are tuning in to hear their own readings. But I actually had a listener, and it kind of touched me. A listener wrote into me during the show and said, with your issues with death and the afterlife and feeling that loss and connection from your mom, what does she have to say? And I just thought it was sweet that this guy wrote in not to ask a question for himself, but, you know, encouraging me to ask a question. And that just, I don't know. Like I said, it really kind of touched me. So I decided, well, all right, let's do this. So I had a conversation with the medium that we had on the program last night. Mm-hmm. And her name is Carol Obley, CaroleObley. I'm going to include a link to her on tonight's episode.
Okay.
Because, I got to tell you, man, I was blown away. I honestly believe she connected with my mom.
Huh.
So it was a very touching moment. It was very sweet. She had a message for me and my aunt. So it really felt pretty powerful. And she was knocking them out of the park left and right. Uh-huh. We will do and have her on Midnight again for another 3-hour span at some point, probably in January. But for those listeners that can't get through, can't stay up late, the holidays are here. Many of us want to make that reconnection. So I'm going to put her contact information on today's program because I got to tell you, I'm blown away. Now, listen, Michael and Marty Perry, spiritart.com are by far and away our favorites. But I've never had a reading done by them because they are close to me. Chip Coffee, Chris Fleming, the same thing. Even Cindy Kaza, everybody's like, well, why don't you get readings from your friends? And I said, because they're my friends. They know too much about me. They know too much about what they want for me. And they'll even admit it that they probably wouldn't give the best readings because even a good medium will tell you that they have a hard time discerning between what they want for you and what the messages are.
Mm-hmm.
So I respect that our mediums will tell you that if they know you too well. And I've never spoken to Carol. She had no clue who I was. A little hurtful, I will admit. But she was able to tap in and do a reading for me. And it was nice. It was very impactful. And she connected with stuff that was very precise, not just general, very precise into what she did. So I was pleased with it. And I just thought I'd pass on the love. Soulvisions.net, folks. SOULVISIONS.net. Soulvisions.net. Carol Obley, tell her you heard about her through Dave Schrader, and book a reading. I think you will be greatly appreciative of it. It's she really did knock me down. And again, spiritart.com with Michael and Marty Perry, always great. And I did have a reading from them. It was actually my mom's reading, and I sat in on it watching that, and then part of it turned to me when we dealt with the death of my friend, Debbie, that we talked about on our true crime episode a month ago. So I have seen them, and they have done a reading for me in the past. I've just not reached out to anyone regarding my mom yet. So that's it. That's all I wanted to say. It was really cool. So I like that.
That's awesome.
All right, let's get to it. Now, for the last couple of years, I've been hosting Midnight in the Desert. And when I took over the reins of that show, I wanted to expand the depth of hosts because, you know, Art Bell was solo host. Heather Wade took over and really didn't think that there was a need for anybody to ever fill in if there was a need for reruns or such. I really wanted to take a different tact because I thought it was great for people to hear different personas and takes on the paranormal. So joining me, Tim Weisberg, Tim Dennis, and Shannon LeGros. Shannon has a brand new book out called Beyond the Fray. She is the host of the acclaimed program Into the Fray, and Beyond the Fray Bigfoot is out and available. If you go to darknessradio.com, click on our store tab, you'll go and you'll see our Amazon storefront link. Click on it. You can go in. We've got subsections. We've got paranormal books, true crime books, and some really cool paranormal swag and gift items. So you can find those different areas to buy cool items. And please go check it out because we've got all the books you hear, true crime books you hear, and some of the coolest paranormal type gift items, including many different Bigfoot items, a Bigfoot hunting kit, some Bigfoot socks and sweatshirts and hats. And there's a lot of cool stuff in there, whether you like Bigfoot, aliens, ghosts, psychic phenomena. There's really a great collection of strange supernatural board games as well. So that's all in the storefront. But you can find Beyond the Fray Bigfoot in there now and available. Welcome to the show, Shannon. Good to catch up with you again.
You guys, too. Thank you so much for having me. I do have a quick question, though. Do you guys have any diapers and the Bigfoot hunting kit?
Actually, that's something they should probably include.
Just in case, you know, for some backup underwear. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're out in the middle of the woods, far from porta potties. And should one pop up on you unexpectedly and cause a surprise reaction, it would be good to have some Depends with you.
Yeah, and really the result is the same. Whether you hear something and you assume it's a Bigfoot and then need the change of something, then, I mean, really, you know, cause and effect can be the same whether it's a Bigfoot or not. But really quickly, about the story that you told about Carol, that is so cool to hear, by the way. And I didn't catch that episode of Midnight in the Desert. But do you guys find, and this is a question for both of you, just really quickly before we jump in, do you guys find that psychics and mediums will say that the longer someone is gone, the more difficult it is for them to get in contact with that person for you?
No, you know, I've never heard. Actually, I hear the opposite. Sometimes if it's somebody that just passed away, sometimes they're not available. It's like they're going through the healing center in the afterlife. I don't know, Tim, is that pretty much what you're hearing from most of our guests? Usually it's harder the closer to the death than it is afterwards.
Yes and no. You know, I recently had someone come forward and bring my stepdad forward. My stepdad's been gone for 10 years. Although I'm finding like my grandfather doesn't, my grandpa Lasker, who Dave knew and still makes fun of one of the lines he said to this day. That's good wire. He has not come forward in quite some time. It's been years. He used to come forward all the time when we first started the show. And I haven't heard from him in probably 6 or 7 years. So,
But to that end, he's also, you know, maybe he came through enough, said what he had to say, and that was that.
That could be, yeah. So, you know, it may be a mixed bag. Maybe, like Dave said, maybe they have so many messages to give, and then maybe they have their own journey they have to go on. You know, they kind of cycle back through, and they have things they have to learn on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, we've had many, you know, when my mom and I had our reading with Michael and Marty Perry, they tapped into my grandfather, who I think at that point, he passed away in 90. So it was 2008. So what, he had been gone 28 years, something like that. How was it? 90 to 2008. Yeah, so it was like 18 to 20 years. I'm horrible with math, Tim. I just can't do it. But he was gone for quite a while, and there was a very deep connection, very strong, powerful connection when he came through. As a matter of fact, Michael even took on many of my grandfather's mannerisms during the reading.
Wow.
Yeah. So pretty cool. I don't know. I would definitely do that. That's she's certainly worth investigating for a full reading.
I would love for Carol to get in touch with Howard Stern, because Howard Stern he basically scoffs at any of the stuff that we all love and have, for the most part, experienced ourselves in some way, shape, or form. But there was recently, and I'm not going to remember her name, I apologize, but recently someone passed away, and they kind of had, it was either a phrase or a number. I think it was it was a word. They came up with a word, and he said, because she knew she was sick, and he's like, okay, well, when you go, you know, pass along this word. And they, only the two of them knew it. So, gosh, that'd be pretty cool if somebody could figure out that word of this person that's crossed over, and Howard becomes a little bit more of a believer and open to this stuff.
I did an investigation in Florida a number of years ago, and we were at some bed and breakfast that was really haunted, but none of the ghosts were coming out to play. And I'd broken out my spirit box at that time and figured, well, you know, let's just see if, you know, is there any spirits here that would, you know, with any one of us that would like to communicate? And I can't remember the guy's name, so I'll just say Bill. A name Bill came through, and these women kind of, they go, oh, my God, that was our dad's name, and that was his voice. And they all recognized it. And they're like, Dad, if this is you, what was the word that you were going to share with us? And we're sitting there, and you hear the ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch of the spirit box. Clear as day, you hear this voice go, Elvis. Ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And these two women burst into tears.
Oh, yeah.
They said that while he was dying in his bed, they said, they were talking to him, there was an Elvis movie on. I think it was like Viva Las Vegas or Blue Hawaii, one of those two. And he was an Elvis fan. And they said, you got to give us a word, Dad. What'll be the word? And he looked up at the TV and he said, Elvis. And they all laughed and said, that'd be perfect. And we heard it, the whole group. It wasn't like they said, oh, my God, did you hear Elvis? They just both reacted. And I said, did everybody hear that? And the room all in like unison said Elvis. And that was the only word that came through. And, you know, we talk a few more minutes and she actually asks, you know, we wanted to know, was this passing natural? And it said no. They had believed that one of the nurses had been poisoning him.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was a creepy, weird moment. But these voices were coming through in direct response to her father's questions. And that was pretty crazy. But the Elvis thing, there was no denying, talking about the word. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Anyway, I digress.
Sorry to take it completely off track there. I was just,
that's fine.
That's a beautiful
radio
story.
Show host jumping in. I get it.
Yeah. Apologies, everyone.
none needed. It was a cool moment. I'm more than happy to talk about what we experienced. And, you know, a lot of people have said, hey, Dave, where's Shannon been this year on Midnight? I've reached out to you. Unfortunately, you've been extremely busy this year. You've been out filming and working on side projects, and whenever I've needed a host, you've been busy doing stuff. I haven't kicked you off the show. You haven't shaken your fist at us and walked away.
Right.
It just hasn't been the right time. So I'm hoping that we'll see you back on Midnight again here sometime soon.
Absolutely.
But catch us up. Aside from your radio program, Into the Fray, what other cool programs and things have you been working on this year?
Yeah, so I think the big thing right now, besides the book, which we'll, of course, touch on, is the fact that we've been filming On the Trail of UFOs. On the Trail of Bigfoot came out, of course, last year. And, you know, I had a small part in that, but it was cool to go on trips with the Small Town Monsters crew for that. But the upcoming On the Trail of UFOs, I'm actually lucky enough to be hosting and narrating. And, you know, it's kind of going to be almost a year-long stretch of travel for us. We had 12 days straight where we traipsed around the East Coast with extremely favorable weather, which was amazing, and got to see the fall colors up north. So that is going to come out probably around April of next year. So look for that, of course, on Amazon, and then you can order the DVDs through Small Town Monsters. But that has been an incredible trip so far, and I've got actually one more coming up, and we're going to culminate filming on that.
Now, getting out into the field, are you going to famous old cases, or are you going to places that are currently active and having sightings?
Actually, the great thing is we've got both. And a man in Ohio that's actually not far from Seth brought forward a case that the craft looks incredible. It would remind one of basically like a Gravitron ride at a fair or something. And he called his sister right in front of us, and she remembers it. You know, they were kids, and they're probably in their 40s now. But, you know, it's just amazing how across any of these topics, one of these life-changing moments can only last 5-10 seconds, a few moments really, but it changes everything. And then from then on, you kind of get this fire lit. And so we're covering, you know, Betty and Barney Hill. It was so cool to actually go to that location after spending, you know, years reading about these places and talking about them.
Well, in the Betty and Barney Hill case, UFO abduction, they actually, like, that town owns it, right? They've got a big roadside sign right there where the abduction allegedly took place.
Absolutely. They embrace it. And not all of the towns do, whether it's a big Bigfoot story or a massive UFO sighting. Some of them, and I think it's smart to do so because it brings in a lot of tourism. I think the looky-loos would come anyway, you know, those that are really ingrained in it. But some of these towns really embrace these kinds of things, which is wonderful.
With the case in investigating, reopening a case and examining a case like the, let me see how many more times I can use the word case in this sentence. This is a case of overusing the word case. Was there anything new to kind of uncover?
No, not as much. I mean, and I think that we, in some of these, most of the people have unfortunately passed away, and it is hard to dig up any witnesses or anybody tied to the case at this juncture. But, and here I go with the cases, it's contagious. I do think, though, that it is important not to just kick some of these older cases under the rug, because no matter what, even if everyone's passed away, there might be some tidbit of information in a newspaper somewhere, hidden in an archive or a library or on microfiche somewhere. So I think that it's still worth kind of putting the investigative glasses on for some of these classic cases.
That case has always blown me away just because of how detailed it is, the time that it took place, the years, the fact that it was a mixed race couple that didn't want to draw attention to themselves to begin with, and then have this kind of heaved upon them. That's part of why that story has stood out so much to me.
Yeah, and it's so crazy that Betty was able to draw that star system. That is a huge head scratcher there. You know, the people that scoff at things like this, you're kind of going, well, she wasn't like an astronomer or even seemed very interested in any of that sort of thing. So I don't quite know how she executed that.
Yeah, that she had knowledge that just didn't happen. We didn't know about for many years, as I recall, part of the star system she drew, right?
Yeah, we didn't have telescopes powerful enough for that. So I don't know how the skeptics could really completely pass that off.
Now, I want to start dabbling into the world of Bigfoot with you and talking about the work and research you've done and the new book. Personally, any new activity for yourself that you can talk about?
None, unfortunately. I keep waiting for the Yucca Man to come a little bit further east out of the Joshua trees, but he doesn't do it. I'm kind of bummed out about that. I will say, I mean, it's good to be kind of back in my original home in Vegas. And I don't miss the snow and the crazy weather and almost sliding into poles and things like that. No Bigfoot stuff recently. It's been great to get on the road with Small Town Monsters. And I'm hoping that, you know, with this, all these new ventures, that hopefully I can get back out in the woods a whole lot more. I'm dying to even get back out to Salt Fork State Park in Ohio, into my favorite spot in the primitive campground. And that's where I heard the whistle that who knows my show, they get tired of me telling that story, but it made an impression on me. So I want to get back.
Well, give us the story. I think you may have shared it with us when we first visited, but for people just tuning in, tell us the whistle story.
Yeah. So the whistle story, Salt Fork State Park is a place that is well known for Bigfoot. And in fact, this area of the campground, and it's primitive because there are no running, bathroom toilets and all of that. And there's no lights back there. And it's actually named Bigfoot Ridge. So, it could make one probably roll their eyes a little bit and go, well, of course, she's got a kind of a Bigfoot story. And I'm not claiming it's Bigfoot, by the way. I'll just preface the story with that. I didn't see it, but it still made an impression. So we get to the primitive campground. We're setting up, and we're the only ones in the entire primitive campground. And we're up from the lake. We can kind of hear boats in the background, putzing around. And then another gentleman shows up and he starts to set up. And I got my nose to the ground and looking around, and he comes over. He's like, hey, what you doing there? I'm like, I'm just looking for stuff. For the most part, we Bigfooters don't just go, I'm looking for the big guy. You don't want to totally freak out the people that you're camping with, especially when he's the only one, he's there by himself. So I'm doing that. And he starts kind of hemming and hawing around a little bit. And I go, okay, well, what are you here for? And he goes, oh, I'm here studying animal migration. Well, that was my opening. And I said, are you talking about Bigfoot? And he goes, yes, I am. So that started it off. And come to find out.
We all find these code words, right?
Oh, yeah. And I knew. I'm like, animal migration. Bingo. He's a freak like me. Woohoo. So he comes all the way 4 hours for the past 2 months straight, because 2 months prior, he saw two Bigfoot right on the service road behind our very campsite. And that's why he came to the same campsite that we were at. So that very night, of course, we made friends with this gentleman, and he goes, all right, let's go back to the service road and, we'll see what happens here. And we've been out there for a couple of hours. It's probably about 1 a.m. We had been listening and just kind of chatting. And for the most part, you try to go, well, some people like wood knocks and things like that. You don't know what you're saying to them. Maybe you're ringing the dinner bell. Who knows? But at one point, he pulls out a string and a glow stick and he cracks that. And he goes, check this out. We're going to try this. And it's very like Crocodile Dundee-esque, like the woo, 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 woo. So it's a light show and a sound show.
Sure.
We're doing that for a while. We're taking turns. And we're on a service road. If you've never been to Salt Fork State Park, it is extremely thorny, brushy, a lot of ground brush there. So not really forgiving for anybody or anything to walk through unless it's on a game trail. Very thick area. So he's swinging it. I'm just kind of standing there. And he stops, takes a pause. We were going to listen in a little bit. And I would say no more than 10 feet in this very thick, thorny ground brush, right in front of us at ground level, came an incredibly loud, long, monotone whistle. And it sounded like the most messed up bird I've ever heard. Massive bird with huge lungs that somehow had lips. That's the only way I can describe that. And can you imagine what that would look like, too? Woo! I love birds, but goodness me. I go from a standing position just instinctively into a crouch. And it's pitch black. I don't know. Maybe I was, if it burst out of the brush, I was just going to, just talking about the diapers, right? Burst into tears and needed a change of pants. But I just went to a crouching position, and I'm sure my eyes were wide as saucers. And I know it doesn't sound very powerful just to say it. And even if it was recorded, which we weren't recording. I know everyone's just like, oh, gosh, Shannon. But it wouldn't have come across.
Typical, typical. We all do
I
that.
Know.
The moments we have some of our coolest bits, nobody's got a camera or a recorder going.
Not a one. And it's the funniest thing. It's just Murphy's Law with that stuff. It really is. But that one whistle, and we didn't hear anything come in. We didn't hear anything go out. I mean, a person would have just, we're bumbling sillies in the woods. We, you know, we like to think that we're stealthy, but I think that's why most of the time, you know, if Bigfoot's out there, they're just kind of watching us. They're like, look at these pink fools back. Like, look at them bumbling around. We heard you a mile away. So that was my Salt Fork whistle. And, you know, nothing really else happened that weekend that was of note, but that one whistle was, that was when I really kind of went, I think they're really out there. I really do think they're out there. And again, I don't know for sure if that was Sasquatch, but it was pretty darn cool.
So a whistle, that's what kind of convinced you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know, don't mean it to sound dismissive, but it's funny what everybody's looking for. Like to some, the thundering wood knocks, that's all that they need to hear to believe it's something like a Bigfoot, you a whistle. I've heard some of that samurai chatter, which to me is really bizarre audio. And it's exactly as it sounds, folks. If you have not heard it, it's a Sierra Recordings, I think it is, isn't that?
Correct,
Shannon?
Yeah.
It. They were recording, and you catch this, and they're just kind of going back and forth in this very cartoony samurai voice that you hear. Chattering back and forth to one another. Do you know, has anybody ever had somebody of Japanese, Chinese, Korean, Vietnamese descent ever listen to these recordings to see if anything sounds familiar?
You know what? That's a really good question. And I have not heard that come up anywhere, but that's an excellent question. And also, kind of wondering if that's you on the tapes there, Dave, because that was shockingly accurate.
I happen to be very good at imitations, so that's all it is.
Hey, Tim, what did he just call you?
He called me a dirty, disgusting trash bag hoe, I believe is what it was. But
I did not call you a trash bag hoe. I think I called you Thunderbutt.
That's what it was. Dirty, disgusting, trash bag. Yeah.
It is the holidays. Thunderbutt. We're all kind of thunderbutts right now, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'm packing on as we speak, actually.
That's right.
I've dipped into the Christmas candy early.
It's been fascinating to me to watch, even on Midnight in the Desert and on this program, how much more downloads we get when we start talking about the cryptids and especially Bigfoot. What do you attribute this popularity to?
I mean, I think it's certainly helped that we've seen shows come out, and as much as people can hate on something like Finding Bigfoot, it's brought a lot more awareness of the subject, and I think it's a lot less tongue-in-cheek, and I think there are a lot of closeted people that they love the subject, but they may not even tell their husbands or their wives or their, you know, whoever, that they're into such a subject.
I guess, yeah, but it's, you know, do you think it's because that, of all the possibilities, ghosts, aliens, Loch Ness, you know, interdimensional beings, that Bigfoot seems the most realistic, so that's why people cling to it a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, when you really get down to the brass tacks with Bigfoot, I don't think that it's that crazy that we haven't found one. If they're half as intelligent as we think they are, you know, there's some conjecture that they bury their dead. If they are that intelligent and they're anything like us, and not that I'm trying to put human traits on them, but maybe they do mourn their dead. Maybe they do bury their dead. And, you know, but nature takes care of itself. It's best made ever without any help, even without burying a body. I think that it was something like 6 months it takes an entire elephant to completely break down between bugs, birds, carnivores, and then just time and things blowing away to dust. So, I mean, it can't always explain everything. And I always wonder, you know, do they dispatch maybe some smaller Bigfoot when they know that it's maybe not all there. And I'm not trying to sound disrespectful in any way at all, but it does make me wonder if it's, you know, like the Spartan thing where they're like, well, you're going to screw it up for the rest of us.
You're
so we can't
link.
Have you around. Yep. Yeah. I'm like, can't there be one slower Bigfoot that gets nicked by the car, you know, and we have a Harry and the Hendersons situation.
Those claims have come in that people have hit Bigfoot with the car, but he just ends up kind of springing off the road.
Right. Or, of course, the government side comes into it. You know, the black helicopters swoop in and then they take the body. So there always seems to be something that helps the big guy out to where science just still kind of laughs at us.
Let's make a quick mention here. I don't know if either one of you caught this series, Evil, on CBS this year. But it is by far one of my favorites. It's an excellent series. If you haven't seen it, to me, it's a very cool, tricked out new version of The X-Files. And Evil is available on CBS All Access, CBS.com, and on demand for the perfect binge fest. If you've got a couple of days off for the holidays, you love the strange and anomalous, check out Evil. It's a mystery with clues in every episode leading up to the chilling season finale. There are jump out of your seat scare moments, and there's stories of miracles, demonic possessions, hauntings, and so much more. Katja Herbers plays Kristen Bouchard, a forensic psychologist, and she's hired by a priest in training, played by Mike Coulter. And together with Asif Manvi, they investigate the Catholic Church's backlog of unexplained mysteries. So I love that they're kind of doing this Vatican dark vault investigations into the strange and anomalous. And the more that they uncover, the more dangerous life is getting for them. Michael Emerson, if you haven't seen him, is the perfect villain, and he doesn't hide in the shadows. He's out in the open wreaking havoc. If you haven't seen it, you got to check it out, folks. You deserve it. It's a great show. You need to binge watch the CBS show Evil. And again, why? Because Evil is just a seriously good mystery. They'll jump out of your seat moments, episode after episode. Plus, you get to, you know, the fun for me is trying to see if you could put the puzzle pieces together to see this bigger picture before the episode is wrapped up. They've got kind of this creepy, demon-riddled, scary picture that they're building throughout the entire season. And Katja Herbers is fantastic. As a matter of fact, so is Mike Coulter, Asif Manvi. Everybody in the show really stands out. Michael Emerson, like I said, is a great villain and kind of this rival psychologist who just likes creating these really, I don't know, nasty situations, but he doesn't do it from the shadows at all. He is such a ballsy villain, and that's what makes it great. You don't have to watch all season wondering who the puppet master is behind the scenes. So curl up on the sofa and binge watch this really cool mystery series on CBS All Access, CBS.com, and on demand. I promise you, folks, it is worth it. You know, yesterday, Tim, we brought up Talkspace, who we're working with on this show.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say enough about it. Folks, you've heard you're not alone by how many times Tim and I have been open about our own anxieties and depressions. You ever, I don't know, let a great idea, maybe a big goal, just fall by the wayside? It's that time of year where we set new intentions for the new year. We set those resolutions, and then we always seem to get in our own way and make them fall. Well, that's why support and accountability are so important. And thankfully, Talkspace online therapy really helps getting accountability and support and making it convenient and affordable for everybody. They will match you with one of 5,000 and a little over 5,000 licensed therapists. And you can message yours the very same day that you match with them. Your therapist will help you stay on track with your existing goals or help you to identify new ones. And there's never an appointment needed. You just message your therapist anywhere from the privacy of your device. That's how easy it is. And I said, it's affordable. Talkspace gives you a month of anytime access for the price of just one in-person therapy session. And the expertise, second to none. The specialties that they work on include depression, anxiety, substance abuse, trauma, relationships. Maybe you have a food, eating, or drinking disorder or more. And they are clinically proven. This is what stood out to me so much about Talkspace. In one academic study, Tim, Talkspace users reported a 50% drop in anxiety after 3 months.
Oh, wow.
And if that's not enough, an 80% of participants in another study said Talkspace was as effective and perhaps even more effective than in-person therapy.
Hmm.
Right? That's great. Some people want to go to a therapist, but they're afraid of the stigma. They don't want to be seen coming or going from the office. They've got the Tony Soprano syndrome, right? But this allows you to take the therapy wherever you want it and make it available to you. It's secure. They encrypt and protect your information using bank level security technology. And as I said, it's confidential support of a dedicated therapist from the privacy of your device, anywhere, anytime. And folks, there's no harm in realizing that we all need a little help navigating life's ups and downs. Talkspace offers that support that you need at an affordable price. And our listeners can get $100 off their first month by using code DARKNESS at Talkspace.com, TalkSpace.com. Use the code DARKNESS. They will match you with a therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy at Talkspace.com. And you can download the app. Make sure to use the code DARKNESS, though. You'll get $100 off your first month. That's Talkspace.com. Promo code DARKNESS. This holiday season, give yourself the gift of comfort, of knowing that there's somebody out there that can listen and help, no matter what you're dealing with. Shannon LeGros, our guest, as we're discussing Bigfoot, Beyond the Fray, Bigfoot, her new book, it's out and available in Kindle form and paperback. You can go to darknessradio.com, click on our storefront, and then click on the Amazon page. You'll see it take you in there. You can go in and get the book right off our site. As a matter of fact, you can get all the books here featured on this program. But go order the book, and then do me a favor. Go rate and review the book once you've had a chance to read it, because we want to help Shannon blow up her book with the popularity of Bigfoot. It's good to see these books that are really intelligently done, well thought out, and great collections of stories get seen by more people. By you rating and reviewing the books, it's going to push it up into their matrix so that it's shared with more and more people. So please, Beyond the Fray, Bigfoot, the book is out and available right now. Make sure that you get it and rate and review it for Shannon LeGros. Shannon, let's dig into some of the new stories and some of the strange encounters that you decided to feature in this book.
Absolutely. And just a quick nod, of course, to my co-author, that is G. Michael Hoff. And actually, Dave, Jeff wants to say hello to you, and he wants to know if you're yet prepared for your grid down scenario.
You know what? I think I am. I think I'm getting there. I was really hoping to get out and start trying some of this. Melba Ketchum invited me to go to a place. She is very confident I will have a Bigfoot encounter.
Really?
My schedule with filming the Holzer Files, I was tied up from February through June. And then she's like, it's either like spring through the, early part of summer or into the fall are the best times. And fall becomes the busy time of schedule for me, which sounds convenient for a guy who's not a fan of the out of doors. But I do want to get out there. I want to do this. I want to get out and experience this. I just talked to our friends from Expedition Bigfoot. We were talking about crossing shows over, and I said, how about you have the guy who does not like the outdoors join you, and I'll be in one of those big inflatable clear bubbles, and we'll go hunt Bigfoot together. I'll be in that giant hamster wheel, hamster ball out in the woods, and we'll see what kind of encounter we can have. That way, if we do run into Bigfoot, they can just shove me at him, and Bigfoot can play a little one-on-one soccer right there on the field.
I mean, you might regret that decision once he actually does that to you. But I think that, going off the idea that they like to watch us and see what the heck we're doing, that may be a first for them. And I think that might actually work.
Well, yeah, you want to make something that even they're going to come out scratching their head and go, what the hell is going on? Right.
And I really honestly think
inflatable clear ball might be the answer for that.
Like, what the heck is this? These people lost their minds.
How did you decide, both of you, you and your fellow author on this, G. Michael Hoff, how did you guys decide which stories to include? Was Was that tough, or were you like, no, these were the standalones? These were the ones we knew needed to be featured.
There certainly are a few standalones, and you know, you try not to have your favorites, but I think us as radio hosts, we do. I mean, we kind of do. So, but there was a back and forth with some of them, and of course, another big part of this is, are they going to allow us to put it in the book? And yeah, they came on the show, but maybe they don't want it in the book. But luckily, many of the ones that I was really just crossing fingers and toes on, they're like, heck yeah, that's awesome. You know, put it in the book. So we have our favorites. And, you know, it is mostly Bigfoot. However, I will say for the Dogman aficionados, there are a couple of those as well. So we had to sprinkle a couple Dogman in there, even though the title is Bigfoot. Dogman is coming out swinging, as angry as he seems to always be. He's in there too. So
maybe I've just played one too many video games and role play games in my life. Is there any chance that Dogman is the next evolution of Bigfoot?
I don't know. That is something that has been talked about. You know, where did he come from? How does something, this amalgamation happen? You know, and I personally truly dislike the term Dogman, but I say this over and over, but I can't say Wolfman. I can't say the L in there for some reason. And, you know, a Wolfman means something that begins as a human and then turns into this canid creature, which is extremely kind of laughable, if we're being honest. So that's not what we're talking about. As you said, it seems to be something in and of itself that is walking around, living, breathing, and where the heck did it come from? So, but it's on my no list. Dogman is heartily on the no list for me because he always seems pissed off when people see him, and he doesn't care who sees him.
Yeah, that's he is certainly seems a more aggressive species of cryptids. The fact that he can, I mean, do we know any scientifically any kind of creature that matches? You know, I know the timber wolves in Minnesota can be massive. You know, are there any wolves that we're aware of that could fit that bill? And, you know, I know the standing up on its hind legs and kind of running through is extremely strange, but I'm just trying to see if there's any scientific understanding of what people might be seeing.
Right. And really, no, there isn't. And something that I always go back to, although this goes into a different subject because the assumption is this was something strictly paranormal and not from around here. But, you know, the bulletproof wolf from Skinwalker Ranch is something that springs to mind. And that one never, I don't think, walked bipedally or anything like that. But the size-wise, that does seem to match up with some of these things, although there are a couple of encounter stories that I've heard that these things can tuck themselves down to be quite, you know, small, but then get up and over 6 to 8 feet tall if they're actually standing upright all the way, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
That's yeah, a no. No. Thank you. No.
Do you know, I can't recall the account that came out of Wisconsin a few years back where the city worker who was out collecting animal carcasses off the side of the road had thrown, I believe, a deer carcass in the back of the truck when he said something leapt into the back, grabbed it, and jumped out. Do we know, was there ever a definitive description? Did it fit more of the Dogman category or Sasquatch category of what his explanation seemed to be?
You know what? That's a good question. And I do not remember the follow-up to that. I need to look back into that. I haven't thought about that for some time. That poor guy, you know, he's probably like, I think I need a new job.
Questions. Yeah. that's, you know, I never really understood. I know that's near the Beast of Bray Road area, which
right.
They believe is in true effect a Dogman like creature. Wouldn't it be something if it's more of a, rabid version of Sasquatch?
Yeah, like I said, just some strange amalgamation, or you know, they got on some dating app for cryptids and then we have this crossover, a little crossover going on there. We're like, come on guys, let's not do that. I mean, people people like sleep. They like to sleep sometimes, especially if their house happens to be backed up near the woods. You don't want to think one of those is right there.
And I got to be honest with you. Looking at Tim, I'm pretty sure his mom was visiting Wisconsin after a couple of hams. She might have accidentally mated with a Sasquatch. There's no other excuse for him. Look at him. He's massive and hairy.
He stays warm in the winter, though, Dave.
He does. He does. Okay, we'll let him back into the conversation now. Don't tell him I said that. So, what?
Hey, Tim.
Were you there? Hey. I thought you were doing the New York Times crossword puzzle at that point.
Listening. Yep. Yep.
Oh, stop it. You're the first one to mention your Velcro like appearance underneath your shirt.
Listen, just because I have micro braids in my back hair doesn't mean I'm any less
micro,
of a human.
Those are macro. They're massive.
Don't start us on the Bigfoot and the braiding either. Is that? Yeah. I mean, that might be another clue there, Dave.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think
braiding
of that.
The hair. Remember with the horse's manes? They get to braid in those things.
Vampires are anal retentive, and Bigfoot likes to braid hair. Apparently a frustrated hairstylist. Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more to share. Shannon LeGros, our guest, some of her favorite stories when we return right here on Beyond the Darkness. We're deep into this year's NFL season, and everybody wants to know who will be coming out on top. Am I right? Well, then you need to check out the one podcast that you can get everything you need to know about the biggest NFL games and analysis on the postseason. I'm talking about the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Ross played 7 years in the NFL before retiring, so you know he's got the insider knowledge that you crave. Be sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast every week on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, and many of your favorite podcast listening apps.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the program. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. You're listening to Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy over there, Tim Dennis. And Tim, I want to announce we're going to do a truncated True Crime Tuesday this week.
Okay.
You know, True Crime Tuesday falls directly on Christmas Eve.
Yes, it does.
And I just feel, you know, I've done this in the past. I just feel icky about putting out some dark, horrific crime story on that day. I just want people to focus on the light and love. So we're going to do a truncated version of the show, but we're going to bring you some dumb crime, stupid criminals for our True Crime Tuesday program this week.
Okay.
So we'll get back into it next week with a full-on crime and dumb crime, stupid criminals. This week, we're going to lighten it up, have a little fun, some laughs, maybe even look at a few of my favorite weird true crime stories from the past year and revisit the dumb of the dumb. So that's what's going to take place this Tuesday. It's an all new show, folks, and we'll have all new stories. Like I said, we might only visit one or a couple of our favorite weird stories from the past year. My cold is getting me. Sorry, I keep getting ready to burst into coughing jags, but I'm able to subdue it by swallowing hard.
You're tamping it down well. It's hard to do.
Oh, I'm trying. Shannon LeGros, her book, Beyond the Fray, Bigfoot, is out and available right now. She's the acclaimed host of Into the Fray. For listeners that are interested, how can they listen to your show, Shannon?
Most all podcatchers will run it, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and then, of course, you can visit the website, intothefrayradio.com.
All right. Very cool. We'll have, very cool. I'm pulling a Peter Brady. When it's time to change. My voice is cracking like crazy. All right, we'll have links up to her website and such on today's program as well. All right, getting into some of the stories that you decided to cover in this book. Let's start off with a couple of your favorites.
Yeah, so another great thing about the book is that not all the stories have even been on the show, and some within it is really actually the first time they've been documented anywhere at all in print or not been covered on any podcast. So I thought I would share one of those with you today. And that actually comes from Derek Randles, and he's one of the founders of the Olympic Project up in Washington State. And Derek, he started off having his Bigfoot sighting, kind of a confirmation experience in 1985. And of course, that lit the fire. He goes Bigfoot crazy and he's talking to anybody that he can. And this story takes place in the late 90s. So he actually, it's funny because he says, well, I invited myself over to, and Bigfoot people will definitely know this name. He invited himself over to renowned anthropologist Grover Krantz's house, and they're chatting about Bigfoot. And I'd say that's a pretty darn great way to learn more about the big guy. And Derek kind of goes, okay, well, where do you think the best place to encounter Bigfoot would be? And Grover says, McCall, Idaho. And this, of course, takes him slightly by surprise because it may not be where you'd think, especially since Derek himself is kind of where we think of the Mecca for Bigfoot. And he goes, okay, well, cool. Well, how would you lure a Sasquatch in if you could? And Grover says, well, I would play a recording of a baby crying. Derek's like, oh, all right, that's all right, cool, interesting. I'll take note of that. Well, he does more than just take note of it. He actually travels before he goes, he happens to have an infant son who cries plenty, which most babies do. So, and this is back in the day of the cassette tapes, so he hits record and makes a nice long recording of his son, which he can play on a loop once he gets out to where he's going. And he does, in fact, end up in the Burnt Fork in the Blue Mountains in Idaho. And he hikes, and he's by himself, mind you. He's a big solo hiker, which a lot of people are like, oh, boy, that's, you know, kind of a scary thing to do anyway. But he does it. And he ends up hiking, this is actually pretty epic, at least 6 to 7 hours in one direction. So he's quite the mountain man. And it's kind of getting late, so he finds a large tree with a really good vantage point. And I believe that he is up from a pretty steep ravine, and it seems like it might have some pretty good acoustics to it. So I know that he's armed with a weapon, which is very smart. You know, there's bears, cougars, other things that can, handle your business really quickly if you are not prepared. And then he's also got a night shot camera, which has one of the Gen 3 night vision monoculars on it, which I can tell you any of those are spectacular to use even to this day if you've played with any of the Gen anything night visions. Those are great. So he waits for dark. He's not really there to sleep. He's there to lure in a Sasquatch. So he's got his back against this tree, and he hits play on the recording of his son crying. And he's pleasantly surprised at how well it's carrying across through this ravine and in this valley in Idaho. So it's pitch black, but now the recording is starting to give him a headache. And who would it not give a headache to? Right. Yeah, I'm sure he's like, boy, this is quite the plan I've come up with. So after about an hour or so, he starts to go, well, maybe I'll go ahead and shut it off and call it a night. I'm not hearing anything. He starts to hear really loud crashing from opposite of where he's sitting. And instincts kicked in, and he pulls out not only, of course, the camera, but his pistol, just in case, because obviously there's a lot of wildlife out there. And 5 minutes goes by, he's like, man, that thing is still crashing around out there. But he's noticing that it's getting closer to where he's sitting. So now he's like, okay, well, that's kind of weird. Playing the baby crying, and now there's something coming near me. So he's starting to question his plan. He really, really is, because he's out here 8 hours from pretty much anywhere and anybody. So he's got everything ready. He's like, let's see what this is. Crashing gets louder and louder, and now the adrenaline is really pumping, and he's getting very, very scared. And he can now he can hear it's on 2 feet. And something that he told me was it sounded like a linebacker running through the woods. So I think at that point he realized just how really, and he says, this isn't me, this is him admitting just how stupid this plan was. It was blatantly just dumb. It was a dumb plan. So he loses his nerve and he shuts the recorder completely off. And now it's silent. And guess what? The crashing stops instantly. And now all he hears is this deep, heavy, raspy breathing. And he's thinking it's about maybe 60 feet from it. Now, he can't see it because it's still in the wood line. But right then and there, when he's listening to this breathing, and he went out there for this, mind you, he decides, he's like, I am done with this. I am done with Sasquatch research. This was stupid. And again, with, you know, probably almost came into play for poor Derek here. So 3 or 4 minutes goes by, the breathing has stopped. And he says to me, this was almost worse because now I don't know where the heck it is. This massive thing, you could tell it's massive, and now it's just silent. So he waits for a while, which turns into morning, which I'm assuming he meant that he eventually fell asleep. I think when the adrenaline dump happens, you know, you just get so exhausted. And we hear that actually in a lot of encounters across many topics. I know you guys have too, that at a very strange point in time, these folks seem to fall asleep, even though they might think they're in some kind of mortal danger. So he goes down into the ravine, down to where he estimates this thing was. And he did, in fact, find 2 extremely large impressions and then a trail that went off into the brush that he could have followed if he wanted to. And he said it was a good sized trail. So something big had created that. And so he's like, yeah, I didn't really feel the fear that I did the night before. I kind of had a confirmation of what it was, but he hiked the 8 hours back. And he didn't have anything happen to him on the way out. And then in retrospect, you know, he goes, the fact that I was using the cries of a baby was extremely disrespectful. And he knows that he was basically toying with this thing's emotions. Is if that's to say that it was a female Sasquatch or a male Sasquatch, we'll never know if the assumption is there that it's a female. Either way, he does wonder what would have happened had he not shut the recorder off. So, and then to culminate that, Derek does still do research. I was just able to meet him and go Bigfooting not too long ago. And he's a wonderful guy and science-based research with the Olympic Project. And, you know, they're boots on the ground. They get out there nearly weekly. So I'm happy to say he did not give up Sasquatch research with after the baby cry story.
You know, the baby cry worries me for this reason. If you've ever heard cougars and wildcats, they make this very disturbing baby cry noise as well. Mm-hmm. I would be more afraid. I would be calling in an animal that would think that there's a wounded cat in the area.
Yeah.
That would be my fear. Now, obviously, you know, it was attracting something big and massive, you know, and this call was something in distress that was attracting the animals. But overall, I would just think it might attract many different types of creatures.
Yeah. And, you know, how lucky was the guy that was jogging on a wooded trail? True story, of course, it was in the news, and had it was a younger mountain lion jump on him, and he was able to actually dispatch that thing. I mean, I don't think that most of us would have been so lucky. And he was, of course, lucky that it was a younger cat, so he could kind of wrangle it a little bit better. But yeah, my goodness, can you imagine calling in a mountain lion and then, heaven forbid, you fall asleep? Well, your dinner.
Well, I, you know, and if we could just take a moment to mention, you know, Lauren Coleman just updated me with his list of cryptozoologists and monster hunters that we lost. I didn't realize so many this year. Back in January, Ed Waterman, dedicated Washington State Bigfooter, He felt he saw Bigfoot often and photographed him regularly. He ran an organization called BF Deal, and he died on his 54th birthday, having experienced hospitalizations after his father died a year earlier. A waterman was found alone in his truck where he was living, deceased by local law enforcement officers. January 24th this year, Frank Calley, age 65, a frequent online and Facebook friend to many in the Bigfoot community, passed away. Julie Adams, the actress who is best remembered as the female victim in the 1954 horror movie classic Creature from the Black Lagoon, passed away. She had a long-lasting career, of course, after the Gillman movie, but in 2011, the title of Adams' autobiography told of that film's impact, The Lucky Southern Star, Reflections from the Black Lagoon. Also February, Raymond T. Nelke died at the age of 91. He was the founder of Collectors of Unusual Data International of St. Louis, Missouri. Also in February, J. Roland, 86, who worked for the Wallace Construction Company, was on Jerry's crew in 1958 when the Bigfoot incidents occurred and remained a local resident there until his passing. In April, we lost Mike Woolley, age 63, a Louisiana swamp ape hunter who died. He appeared in a couple of different documentary television programs discussing his quests. March 1st, Christopher Kenyon Oreck, 69, a collector of cryptid artifacts and frequent online commentator of cryptozoology, died. Then Savannah Bright, only 15 years old, died after she was struck by a Norfolk Southern train on Sunday night, May 26th, on the train tracks near the Pope Lick Trestle, where she was searching for the Pope Lick Goatman. And a big hit to all of our families across the board in the paranormal. On July 18th, we lost Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She authored and compiled nearly 65 books, including books in the Fate Presents series. Planet Bigfoot was her newest title that came out just this last year in 2019. She lost her battle with a lengthy dealing with cancer, unfortunately. And kind of on the sidetrack, Yuri Dabenko passed away on the same date, I believe it was. And then on April 29th, of course, we lost Stanton Friedman. And although he wasn't a Bigfooter, still one of our bigger anomalous researchers out there, Tom Shirley died in July this year of Richardson, Texas, died after having been in the hospital fighting cancer. He was involved in Bigfoot studies through 2012, teaming up with Lyle Blackburn, good friend of Arshan, and Craig Woolheater to investigate Louisiana and Texas reports. September, we lost Michael Mitchell, the author of the comic book Granite State Bigfoot, died unexpectedly. In September, Bill Davis died in British Columbia. He was active in the 70s Bigfooter world. Albert Diatney, who was 85, he was Roger Patterson's brother-in-law and a film backer of the Patterson-Gimlin film, died of complications of a stroke. And the last two that we've had this year so far, Tim Fazno, 63, reportedly died of a heart attack. I guess he was a more controversial figure in the Florida ape investigation world for about 10 years. Rumors circulated on the Bigfoot sites that he died in the woods from a snake bite, but his twin brother, Thomas Fazno, said his brother died at home of cardiac arrest and had struggled for years with high blood pressure. And then finally, just last week on the 16th, we lost John Trapper Tice, 72 years old. We've had Trapper on our show, I think, two or three times, Tim, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Yeah.
Yeah. He passed away. He's of Travel Channel's Mountain Monsters fame and founder of the Appalachian Investigators of Mysterious Sightings. Died on the evening of Monday, December 16th, from kidney failure. He'd been suffering with health issues for about 2 years. Prior to the recent announcement of season 6, Tice reported he would not appear due to the development of a serious blood clot in his leg. And he said, "I'm facing up to dying. I got to. That's what's happening for me. I'm dying." So we lost quite a few cryptozoologists this year, quite a few people in the anomalous studies research. So thank you to Lauren Coleman and CryptoZooNews.com for that information as well.
Yeah, thoughts go out to friends and family of all those folks. I got to meet John Trapper years ago at an Ohio Bigfoot conference, and he was such a down-to-earth, kind soul. So,
yeah, he was.
It's been a huge loss.
Always a favorite guest of ours, too. People really loved hearing when we had Trapper join the show. Yeah, it's a bummer. A lot of loss in this field. But the field continues on. We've got more research, more studies, more stories to share. But first, Pluto TV. Tim and I have been beating this drum for quite a while, and I don't know why some of you are still hesitating. You need to join up with Pluto TV. You know what? Fine. Keep your other sources of entertainment, because Pluto TV is free. As a matter of fact, it's the leading free streaming television service. You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies. That's tens of hundreds, Tim, for those of us trying to keep up with the math. You can watch hundreds of TV channels, thousands of movies, all on demand, all for free. No credit card needed, no sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again, or keep paying for it and download Pluto TV anyway for free on all of your favorite devices today. You can get it on your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStations, Tim's belly button, hell, anywhere that you stream, get Pluto TV. All right, Beyond the Fray, Bigfoot, that's the book Shannon LeGros and I are discussing. Let's get into another one of your favorite stories covered in the book.
You bet. All right. So this title is Scarface. And as you will find out, it is a very fitting title.
Say hello to my little friend.
Say hello. Except this one doesn't take place in a big, beautiful mansion in Florida. You know, it's just in the middle of nowhere. And there you go. Need the brown pants again. Oh, darn it.
Is there still cocaine involved?
Probably. Okay. I mean, you know, some might say, you know, that they'll pass everything off as a hallucination and a side effect of hard drugs. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's hear about Scarface.
So Chris is around 13 years old and he is enrolled in a summer day camp. So that means they'll just go out for the day and then on the bus they get and off to home again. So they took the kids out to various places each day. And this area would be Bear Mountain State Park in New York on this particular outing for the kiddos. And being that he's 13, he admits he's like trying to be kind of a rebel. So he and another buddy are breaking off the group during lunchtime to have a little cigarette. Uh-oh. So off they go. And he says, you know, we went off quite a ways because we didn't want the nasty adults to smell the smoke. So they find a spot, kind of, sort of, they're walking around. But they keep hearing something up on the ridge above them, which they don't think much of. They're in a state park. I think it's around 5,000 acres or so. And it could be pretty much anything, right, guys? So they stop to finally light the cigarettes and they kind of turn to face each other. And he looks up at his friend and his friend is looking behind him over his shoulder. And he's got this look of utter shock and horror on his face. And the friend abruptly turns heel and bolts, and he means he really just left without any regard for anything else. But you'll find out very quickly that he made probably a very good decision. So Chris is like, okay, well, that's not good. Maybe it's a bear. Turns around and sees what his friend just saw. And not 10 feet away, and all of us are not great at math. I'm the same way. So guys, 10 feet away is really, really close, like not good. And he said it was covered in gray hair, and it is about 9 to 10 feet tall, making it the largest bipedal anything he's ever seen. And here we go. In its right hand, it is holding half of a dog by its neck. And he can tell it's been dead for a while because it's like a lab type dog, like a lighter color. He can see that the blood where the other half departed from the top half that it was holding was a little bit dried. And I hope no one's eaten lunch because the entrails were hanging out of the top half. And in its left hand, and Chris admits this might be even more horrifying, it was holding either a piece of clothing, an article of clothing, or a blanket. He could not tell which it was. So he's pretty much frozen in fear, and I'm sure that the shock of seeing basically a monster and knowing that it's real would maybe keep you either placed or you run like your friend. So this thing is so tall, and he's a little younger. He's still 13. So he's not as tall as he says as I am now. He had to actually physically look up, but he goes, I wanted to see its face. I did. And I didn't at the same time. And he looks up over its, and he admits that the chest is massive, like 5 feet across, muscular. It's sparsely covered in hair, again, gray hair. And then he says where the hair isn't covering the skin is brown. And then, of course, the large arms like tree trunks. So he looks up at his face, and the eyes are black, and the teeth, he said, were pretty much like ours. He said he didn't see any canine teeth or anything, but maybe its mouth wasn't quite open enough. He kind of mentioned that it had almost a sneer. I'm sure that was great to see being 10 feet away. It reminded him of a gorilla or an ape. And it's called Scarface because it had a massive scar, one across the forehead, and then another one across its cheek, which is interesting. You know, Chris later on talked to me about it and said, you know, I wonder how he got that, you know, a fight or just a rough life in the woods. Kind of makes you wonder what that Bigfoot had gone through. So he said it wasn't the cleanest Bigfoot, though, at that point in its, you know, yearly cycle of moving through. He said it had all kinds of things matted into its hair, which is an interesting thing to know.
Half a dog with entrails dangling out of it. It wasn't a clean one, huh?
You'd think they would take better care of themselves, especially if it was, you know, like that time of year where they're trying to look good for the ladies, you know. But he didn't really care at that point. He was just hungry. So, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a little sidetrack here. I don't know how many times that you guys have heard of either, you know, it is an interesting detail, is either they are extremely dirty and they smell like, you know, a corpse rolled in manure, or that's they're actually the quite clean. Name.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So
well,
in this
just,
case,
just like people, they've, you know, probably just got different hygienic capabilities or what time of year. You also have to wonder if they're hunters, do they roll around in certain things to cloak their smell from whatever it is that they're trying to eat?
Exactly. I mean, deer have, we as humans have to pretty much, the hunters will take their clothes and put them into bags and such just so that no scent comes up for the deer. So I'm sure that a Bigfoot would be much the same. That's a really good point, Dave. So he's still standing there, and eventually he sees the face. Just in a split second, his mind takes in all of that information. And then finally his legs decide to work again, and he bolts from the scene. And he said that, honestly, one of the most terrifying times wasn't standing in front of the thing. It was when he was running back to camp, because he was worried that, of course, it was following him or paralleling him back to the camp. And so he gets back to camp, sees his friend is in probably a huge state of shock, and has actually got a counselor, one of the camp counselors, talking to him, but he wasn't speaking. And then the day ends, they get back on the bus, and Chris tries to talk to this young man that bolted, and he won't talk. And Chris said that even to this day, he's gotten in touch with him, and he still will not talk about this experience. So Chris still has nightmares, and he admits it of course changed his life. It did light a fire for Bigfoot. He did end up having one more encounter later on down the road, but he admits, you know, you're really pushing it when you go out there, and if you can, in fact, like Derek did, lure them in, it's kind of the situation where you got to be careful what you wish for, because you just may get it.
Yeah, no doubt. That's creepy as hell.
Yeah, and of course...
You're strolling out in the woods and you come upon a giant, hairy, bipedal, stinky creature to begin with. That's going to be bizarre. But then you throw in the fact that it's carrying a dead, half of a dead dog with it. Yeah, that's time to call it quits and maybe just become a, you know, an indoorsman like me, Shannon.
See, doesn't that just put the stamp of approval on your decision to stay out of the woods?
It certainly does. It makes me sound less crazy and you just a little bit more crazy. I got to be honest.
I would agree with that. I mean, I do wish for one. I do. But when you hear somebody like Chris, and you actually get to hear their voice when you're taking their account, they take themselves right back there, and you can hear the fear in their voice and the fact that it completely changed these people's lives when it's especially a situation like that. And again, just to drive that point home, what was in his left hand was worse because he didn't know where that came from. You know, was that the person that it was with? Was it the dog's blanket out of its dog house, which will never be going home again? And the poor people are like, where the hell's the dog? I don't know. Who thought you put him out? I did. You know, it makes you wonder, are people on the venue ever for Bigfoot? You know, and that's a whole nother can of worms. But
well, yeah. What do you think? I know David Paulides has not so much said that, but he's kind of hedged around that base that we may be on the food chain for Bigfoot, and that may be why some of them, you know, why so many people go missing. What's your base tell you?
So earlier when we kind of brought up that there might be different kinds of Bigfoot, obviously, as far as mentally, like people, a little bit more broken with some screws loose. And, you know, you guys talk about true crime all the time as well. There may be some Bigfoot out there, I think, that are more opportunistic. And if there is someone like Derek, or maybe young ones get away from their parents at a campsite or something, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a really dark subject right there, right? Like Bigfoot dragging somebody back to a cave and Vlad the impaling them and cooking them up over the old open fire. But I don't think it's an impossibility.
Well, and if they're inbreeding creatures, it may be that, you know, after a couple of generations, things aren't working great for the genetics of these beasts either. And maybe that's what the mutations are that you're seeing that look more dogman like.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually think that that's a very plausible thing, because honestly, the idea of a dogman does seem so far out there. And it's funny because we're already talking about Bigfoot, right? But I don't see why that's not a possibility. They're swimming around in the same pool there. So you got to wonder what happens after years and years and years. Absolutely, dude.
All right. Let's go in with another story. And do you have a creepy story that didn't make the book that you kind of regret not putting in that you'd want to share with us?
Yeah, and this may end up in a tome for Bigfoot that we're going to be, because we're going to be working on other books. So when I get that many more Bigfoot stories, we'll do another book for everybody. But this one is in Kentucky, and it was entitled Cave Yellers of Kentucky. And I'll just share with you, because I know we're running short. This one's a quick one. The first sighting that she had, she was just a young girl, and this is in the middle of Kentucky, where all of the caves are, right? So one of the nicknames they'd have is the Cave Yellers. And she and her dad it's late at night, they're in their home, and she looks out the window, and what she describes as a large, hairy man was stealing a bag of meat. And what had gone on that day was the power had gone out, so they took everything out of the deep freezer, because it's Kentucky, her father hunted, so they had some meat and things like that out and ready to eat. So they put it outside. It's obviously cold, so it won't go bad. Well, she's like, hey, Dad, look at that large hairy guy. I don't know if she said hairy, but look at that guy stealing our bag of meat. And it runs right by the porch. And she, at this point, the power is back on, but they hadn't gone and gotten everything back out from outside yet. So she can see from the porch light, now we're going into more details, that it's massive legs covered in hair, and it had big feet. So Dad gets up. Of course, by that time, it's gone. And not long after this, maybe another year or so, she ends up seeing a Bigfoot standing next to a pole. And the pole stands about 5.5 feet tall. I had been out there in person and had seen this very pole. This pole had obviously been there a long time, and the land stayed within her family. So this thing is standing, and she assumed it was the same creature, but there's really no way to tell. But it was standing at least 6.5-7 feet tall. And, you know, I think even for myself, after years of looking into Bigfoot and being kind of obsessed with it and wanting that experience, I don't think that it's, you'll never be prepared if you actually get to see something that's that big, 5 feet across for the shoulders and standing upwards of 10 feet tall. 10 feet tall is reports that all of us have heard before. That is insane. And of course, that begs the question, how in the world do they stay hidden if they're that big?
Right.
But if they're that smart and they're that good in the woods and we're that bumbly and horrible in the woods, let's be honest, I just don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I like to I've dubbed them the Liam Neesons of the woods. And that's it's honestly right. What they are. I don't know how they make it happen, but they do.
It was in one of our first seasons on Darkness Radio where one of our guests proposed that they work like a military unit, that they station sentries at certain points and scouts. The scouts are most likely the independent ones we see from time to time crossing the road or out going rogue, but that they're nomadic and, you know, the sentries are the ones letting out the whoops and the wood knocks to alert the rest of the tribe that there is interlopers in the area, and then they'll back up and back out. So they're constantly, you know, just enough ahead to stay out of view of humans. And listen, that's how military works. Why wouldn't it make sense that maybe the animal kingdom on something that's this adept to living out there couldn't have figured something out like this as well?
Absolutely. And that's a great point. And it's something that even orcas do. We've seen them use tactical maneuvers to capture seals. You know, they'll get them cornered on an iceberg somewhere and then it is knocking right into the water. As sad as that can be to watch, that's what they do to survive.
The book is called Beyond the Fray, Bigfoot, Shannon LeGros and G. Michael Hopf, the authors. We have a link up again for that book in today's program info, so you can find it right there. You can also find a link to Shannon LeGros' website and her radio show, Into the Fray. And I also mentioned Carol, the medium, at the beginning of the show. I've included her link on today's program as well, so you can find that all there. Shannon, it's always a pleasure catching up with you. Thank you for sharing some weird and unusual Bigfoot sightings.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
And we wish you a lot of success with the book, and let us know when the second part of the book comes out and when your documentaries hit. We'd love to be able to help promote that and get the word out.
I certainly will. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for tuning in. Remember, get the book, rate and review it. Help Shannon out to spread the word about the book. If you have friends that are into cryptids, make sure you pass the link on to them on today's program so that they can get the book for themselves. And we wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. No matter what belief system you are, theology you ascribe to, we hope that your life is filled with an abundance of happiness and cheer, and may it lead into your next year and beyond. That's it for us. We'll be back again with you, True Crime Tuesday, Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals edition this Tuesday, and we'll be back again next weekend with you with more of the strange and unusual right here on Beyond the Darkness.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At WashableSofas.com, you'll find the Anabe Sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash, perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit WashableSofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.